Welcome to the World Class Podcast. This is a special episode for Mental Health Awareness Week, which runs from the 15th to the 21st of May 2023. The theme of Mental Health Awareness Week this year is anxiety. In this episode, Joe from the Student Life team is joined by Kerry Connolly, Clinical Lead at Tork Campus, and Adrian Clark, Student Health and Wellbeing Manager at the University of London, to take your questions on the subject.
So I'd like to introduce the two guests that I have with me today, one in the office and one virtually. Welcome to Kerry Connolly, who is the clinical lead for Tork Campus.
Yes, no problem. Yes, I'm Kerry Connolly. I'm clinical lead here at Tork Campus. My professional background is I'm a CBT therapist. CBT is a type of talking therapy, and it uses a really particular model to understand what's going on for somebody. It looks at the way somebody thinks, the way somebody feels, and the way somebody behaves, and where people can get kind of trapped in really unhelpful patterns of thinking and behaviours that can lead to a bit of a vicious cycle. And CBT helps people to kind of break those cycles. I'm also a registered mental health nurse. I've spent most of my career in the NHS, most recently in primary care psychology services, working with people with depression and anxiety disorders. And before that, I worked more with people with severe and enduring mental health problems like schizophrenia or bipolar.
Thank you so much, Kerry. It's so wonderful that you're able to join us today. And those listeners or viewers of the World Class podcast will recognise my next guest, who is Dr. Adrian Clark, who is the University of London Student Health and Wellbeing Manager. Welcome, Adrian. Thanks again for joining us on this mental health and wellbeing special.
Thanks, Jo. It's really, really great to be here again. And as you said, my name's Adrian. I'm the Student Health and Wellbeing Manager at the University of London. My professional background is in emergency medicine. I practiced emergency medicine for almost 20 years in the UK National Health Service. But I've also been looking after students in a residential capacity since about 2001, which I've lost count of how many years that is.
And you look younger than anyone will do the maths on there with the...
Oh, stop it.
We'll cut that bit out, sorry. thank you so much for joining me. And I just want to kind of set the tone of this podcast and this filming today to just say that the questions that I'm going to be asking are genuine questions that are coming from the students today. We did a short campaign to ask students to send in any questions that they had around the theme of anxiety and in general, really, any kind of questions about mental health and well-being. So I think, you know, as this is the focus of the podcast, I think we should get straight into it if both of the panel are okay to start. So the first question that I have, and I'll start with you, Adrian, if that's okay, is a question that's come in. These questions have all come in anonymously, by the way, so I'm not going to be name-checking any students, but just to say that we thank you so much for sending in these questions. So the first question is, how do you tackle working under pressure?
Yeah, this is a really good question, isn't it? And I think that the skills that we learn at university for working under pressure are skills that are going to be important for the rest of our working lives. And for me, this question kind of conjures up two scenarios. So I'm thinking about that kind of immediate pressure where you've got something that you really must be doing right now, when you can sort of feel a bit panicked, a bit kind of time pressured, and really under that kind of immediate pressure. And then the other kind of longer term pressure where you might have multiple projects and multiple deadlines over weeks or months that can kind of feel as if they're just piling up on you, and that sort of, it's a slightly different kind of pressure. And for me, those two types of pressure maybe need slightly different approaches to working with them. So kind of thinking about that more immediate situation, and I can draw on maybe some of my experience of working in emergency medicine here. Certainly it can be a pressured environment to work in. And something that I think can be really helpful is taking time, even if it's just a few moments, when you're under that kind of immediate pressure, just to reconnect with really where you are and how you are and how you're doing. And, you know, that might be maybe taking a few moments to connect in with the feeling of your breath in your belly, or feeling the weight of your body on your chair, or checking in with how your hands are feeling. It could be, you know, something really physical and real to take you out of what can become a little bit of a spiral of panic and, oh my gosh, I've really got to get all of this done right now. And then I guess there's that other kind of longer term pressure, which for me is, it, in some ways, could be maybe a little bit more of a practical kind of approach to having things like a to-do list, making sure that you're very clear about what needs to be done and when it needs to be done by. By doing that, by writing down, and it really, it needs to be a written to-do list, not a mental to-do list, because by writing down what you need to get done, you take that task out of your brain, so it doesn't have to keep swirling around in your brain, and you put it onto a piece of paper that you know you'll come back to. It can just help sort of take off a little bit of that pressure. And then my final kind of tip, I guess, for that kind of longer term pressure is, if there are things that need to be done at a particular time, block out time in your calendar to do it. Because it, you know, you could have a to-do list of 50 things which you're not going to get done in one day, but by planning and blocking and saying this is going to take 1 hour, I'm going to take 1 hour chunk out of my calendar, can really, again, sort of really give you a sense that you're a little bit more in control of things that otherwise might feel unmanageable.
Yeah. And I wonder, Kerry, if you could add anything to that, because I was kind of thinking along the lines of our students at the moment. There is quite a large majority that are actually just sitting assessments right now, or about to sit assessments. And when you have those kind of competing pressures of maybe work, maybe family, maybe life, and knowing that you've got to complete an assessment that might be 3 hours, unseen, written exam paper or something. I mean, what advice would you give to our students maybe in that kind of scenario?
I think probably one of the most important things when we're under that kind of pressure, and as you were saying, students are kind of sitting these really long exams, is, I suppose it's not rocket science, and this is probably something that, you know, most students have heard before, but it's not something that we always do, and that's, you know, really practicing that self-care, really looking after ourselves. So that means, you know, sticking to your routines, getting some sleep, eating well, doing some physical activity, making that time to kind of connect with other people, get some support around you, try to avoid drinking too much, because I think that sometimes we can just expect ourselves to perform, but we're not kind of doing all this other stuff that allows us to kind of perform at the level that we want to, and that's just really, really important. And also part of that can be around having boundaries, and sort of if your parents or family members are trying to kind of get you to do stuff, it's just saying no. You know, it's okay to say no and to kind of, you know, really protect your boundaries and protect your time and protect your space. I think that's something that's really, really important. And also to, you know, reward yourself when you've done the exam, when you've finished it, to kind of give yourself something to, you know, mark that you've reached that milestone. That can be kind of anything really, whether it's watching your favourite TV programme or going somewhere with friends for a couple of hours, but just kind of taking a moment to kind of reflect on what you have done before you're then onto the next thing.
Well, thank you both so much for that. And I think leading on from that is the next question that a student has sent in, and it is relating to kind of assessment and assessment outcomes, and that is, how do I maintain a good level of mental health while aiming for top grades? So, Kerry, if I can ask you to come in on that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting the way that question is worded. How can I maintain my mental health while aiming for top grades? I think there's something here about setting yourself goals that are kind of realistic and sort of doable. There's nothing wrong with aiming for top grades. There's nothing wrong with, you know, striving to do your best. These are all really, really good things. But having a more tangible goal, something that you can actually do and have control over, is probably going to be more helpful to you. So, for example, you might say something like, oh, I'm going to study for this amount of time per day or this amount of time per week, rather than this bit of an obscure goal of getting top grades. And as well, I think it's really important to kind of be mindful of the kind of thoughts that we're having. So, you know, you might be having the thoughts like, you know, I must get these top grades, or I'm not good enough to get these top grades, and having a bit of an answer for those thoughts. So your answer might be something like, you know, I am capable, and I'm working really, really hard to achieve my goals, something like that. So you're just kind of trying to tune into those negative thoughts, those thoughts that kind of might be popping in, and you can have a bit of an answer for them. You know, we know that we can't control these kind of thoughts, and negative thoughts can pop into our mind, and there's really nothing that we can do about that. But we can choose, you know, how we respond to them. We can choose not to focus on them. And again, in terms of maintaining your mental health, all the stuff that we've kind of already talked about, practicing that self-care, making sure you're getting enough sleep, eating well, exercising, taking a break, setting those boundaries.
Yeah, and I think, Kerry, something that really stood out for me in your what you were saying there is that idea about boundaries and being realistic about expectations. So I'm thinking we can't control the grades that we're going to get. We can't say that we're going to get top grades, but we can say how much effort we're going to put into something, and that's something that we can control. And I think that's something that, you know, is really easily missed in the academic setting, that you can't control the grades, but you can control the effort. And boundarying that effort is also important. This is the most that I can do with what I've got right now, and I think having that clear idea is essential.
I know that some of our students will feel that there is a really strong expectation from their families, from their carers, from their parents, to achieve really, you know, the best grades possible, and the weight of that pressure can sometimes become overwhelming. How would our students approach that pressure?
For me, again, I think it's about being clear about the things that you can control, and, you know, being clear with your family. I am putting the most effort that I can into this endeavour, but also, you know, really being clear that the grades, yeah, they're important, but you can't control them.
Yeah. That's right. And Kerry, do you have any thoughts on that?
I would agree. And is it something about focusing on the things that you kind of can control and the things that you can't? And I suppose if your parents or your family, you are kind of feeling that pressure, you know, is there something you can do about that? Could you have a chat with them about that maybe? Or if not, are there other people around you who are also kind of feeling that? You know, it's really always really, really helpful to kind of share how you feel with the people around you, and to talk about that. And, you know, it can just be a huge release just to kind of get that out and to talk it through with somebody. So I would really encourage anyone in that position to kind of find someone that they can open up to and just kind of talk out their feelings.
It's just about sharing thoughts, isn't it? Sometimes it just kind of unloads that sort of burden, doesn't it? Okay, so this is a question that's come in. It's actually quite a kind of long question, really, in a sense. And this student asks, how can we cope with anxiety disproportional to the actual subject? Like, I know myself to be overwhelmed and uncalm, but I still can't help to control these feelings. It's quite heartfelt, that question that's come in there, Kerry. Have you got any initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's really important to kind of think about what anxiety actually is, and I think that can kind of help us understand that experience. So anxiety is part of our body's sort of defence mechanism. So if, say, for example, someone was about to attack you, you would start breathing really heavily to take oxygen in. Your heart would start pounding really, really fast to get that oxygen out to your muscles to either kind of run away or attack in defence. And even though these feelings feel really, really unpleasant, they're actually not harmful to us, and they are there to, you know, keep us safe. But of course, in the modern world, you know, we find ourselves in all these positions where, you know, running away or attacking somebody is just not going to be helpful for really obvious reasons. But we still get that kind of really physiological, that sort of bodily response, which, you know, is really, really difficult. Something that can help if you're feeling super, super anxious is just to practice controlled breathing. And all that means is just to breathe really, really steadily, sort of in for 4 seconds, take a breath, take a second, and then out for four, for 4 seconds and then take another second and just kind of repeat that pattern, because that can really, really lower, you know, that kind of physiological arousal levels. So we were just talking about how anxiety is there to, you know, is there to protect us, is there to keep us safe, even though it feels really, really unpleasant. And we talked about controlled breathing, which can help us kind of lower those sort of arousal levels. And I think that if you're feeling anxious all of the time and it's starting to have a really kind of negative impact on your life and the way that you live your life, it's really important to tell someone and to maybe and to ask for some help. And that might be a friend or maybe even your GP. There are loads of different options out there that can help you manage your anxiety, for example, CBT or counselling. So I think it's really important to speak to somebody and just have a bit more of a chat about, you know, what's going on, what's making you feel anxious, and what is going to be the most helpful treatment option for you.
Oh, thanks so much, Kerry. I think that will be really helpful, Adrian. I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
I'd really just echo exactly what Kerry was just saying, and I think it, you know, a lot of this is about recognising that some feelings of anxiety are normal, and worry can be normal, but that when anxiety maybe starts to interfere with our ability to do the things that we need to do in our everyday life, that might be time to talk to a professional about those feelings.
Yeah. The next question that we have is kind of like, actually you've both touched upon kind of small things that people can do to help with anxiety. But as this is phrased, there's a question I'm going to ask it anyway and see if we can surface some any other ideas that might come up. So this next question from a student is, what are the small things that need to be done on a daily basis to overcome anxiety? Is there a formula, Adrian?
I don't know about a formula. Kerry has already mentioned in one of our earlier answers some of the things that we can do to look after our mental health on a daily basis. I'd like to maybe draw attention to the idea of the five ways to well-being, which is a really commonly promoted kind of simple five-point guide to things that we can do to look after our mental health. So the five ways to well-being, I'll list them and then we can talk about what they might be. But they are to connect, which means connecting with the people around us and having those sort of personal relationships with people who care about us. It's about getting active, so that's the second step, and this is about physical activity. And you know, it doesn't have to be running a marathon. It can be taking the bus for one stop less every day, so that you just get a little bit of exercise and working up from there. The third point on the five ways to well-being is to take notice, and this is about mindfulness. It doesn't have to be about formal mindfulness meditation. It could be something as simple as taking 5 minutes to walk in the park and just enjoy the sound of birds singing in the park, and that, you know, that is being mindful, and it's about taking notice. The fourth element of five ways to well-being is about learning and to keep learning new things, and university is one way to do that, but maybe have another something that you're interested in learning too, whether it's a musical instrument or a hobby, woodworking. I don't know what it might be, but you know, something else to keep your mind active that might be different from the stuff that you've got to learn for university. And the fifth point in the five ways to well-being is about giving, and that could be things like giving in a charitable way, but it can also be about giving your time to people, helping other people. One saying is that doing good does you good, and you know, I think that's really true.
Thank you both so much for that. I have a question here, and this is from a student who actually has autism, and they have asked the question, well, they've kind of made a statement really, and I feel like we should include that in this podcast, because I think they're will be some talking points that we can actually surface and hopefully support this student who has said, I have autism and I struggle to live and have a fear of death. So that is really open and honest of them to share their thoughts. And I just wonder, Adrian, if I can start with you, how you would respond to that and to perhaps guide the student who's asked this question.
I guess, absolutely, and thank you to this student for sharing this this comment. I think maybe for the benefit of all of our audience, it might be worth outlining what autism is. It may be that not everyone is clear about that, and I guess the first thing is to say is that autism isn't a mental illness. It's a condition that we think people are born with, and people with autism might find it hard to communicate and interact with other people. They might find it hard to understand how other people think and feel. And it's quite easy for many people with autism to kind of get overwhelmed, whether that's by maybe bright lights and bright sounds, or by kind of situational factors and sort of really feeling overwhelmed by what's going on for them, particularly maybe in social contexts. So I guess that's maybe a brief outline of what autism is. And the second point that I think is important here is that autism can coexist with mental health problems, so things like anxiety and depression, and those conditions can be maybe more difficult to recognise and diagnose in someone with autism, but they can coexist. And for me, someone who is saying that they struggle to live and have a fear of death, that really sounds like something that would benefit from a consultation with a professional. Because it sounds like this person needs some help and some input from someone who cares for them.
Yeah, it is a tough one. It's really difficult, and I'm really sorry to hear that this person is kind of feeling in that way. But I also just wanted to say that, you know, it is normal to kind of fear death and to feel kind of frightened about that, and I think a lot of people feel that way. I know I certainly do. If I think about it, it makes me feel quite frightened as well. And I think I would just really encourage that person just to kind of talk to someone else about how they're feeling. And again, as you've already said, if they find that they're dwelling on this a lot, if it's having a really negative impact on their life, that I would really encourage them to reach out for some professional support.
So I have another kind of longer question here from a student who has said, or who is asked, how can students combat the anxiety of receiving examination results, knowing that they cannot change the outcome of their results, and that worrying is thus pointless? And I know we've kind of touched on the point of you can't worry about what you can't change, but the anxiety around that, even though knowing that as an absolute, is still difficult, isn't it, to manage for a lot of students, especially around that time, that waiting game when the results haven't been released, and there is that sort of that anticipation and that anxiety that surrounds that anticipation.
I just want to say, just really some of this, touch on some of the stuff that we've already mentioned, that it, you know, waiting for exam results is anxiety provoking. You know it is, and it's really, really normal to feel anxious about that. And I would just really encourage students to talk to other students, to talk to the other people on their course who are going to be in exactly the same boat, and not to kind of stay in, or not to sort of isolate yourself, and just to kind of get out there and be kind of sharing how you're feeling with other people, and all that other stuff. While this is going on, making sure you're kind of looking after yourself and connecting with other people, making sure you're getting sleep and all of that sort of stuff. It might also help to kind of recognise any negative thoughts that might be popping in again. So, you know, thinking, you know, what if I fail the exam, or what if I get thrown off the course? What if I sort of disappoint my family? And to kind of recognise when those kind of thoughts are popping in, and again, to have that bit of an answer for them to challenge those thoughts. So maybe something like, you know, oh, I prepared well for the exam. I did my best. And even if I didn't do as well as I might have hoped, you know, it isn't the end of the world. And then to kind of just try and let that go and move on. I know that's easier said than done when we're having these kind of worrying and difficult thoughts. But as you kind of pointed out really well in the question, that, it, you know, it doesn't change anything. So maybe thinking about distracting yourself, doing something else when things feel a little bit more intense.
You know, something that I find really helpful at times is kind of zooming out on a situation and thinking, okay, so if the worst happened and I didn't get the results that I wanted, can I zoom out on that and think, well, how would I be feeling about it a year from now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, or 50 years from now? And, you know, a lot of the time you realise maybe it's not quite as important to your life picture and your life story as you've been telling yourself it to be.
There's some other themes that we had coming in around this subject. They weren't questioned as such, but I feel that if we've got some time now, I just want to ask the panel their thoughts on a couple of key points around anxiety. And one of them is feeling as though your anxiety escalates into panic attacks, and what students can do to support themselves around that escalation.
Yeah, and I think just kind of going back to a little bit about what we were talking about earlier, about those kind of really physical or bodily symptoms of anxiety, and that's kind of really what a panic attack is. It's just really, really intense anxiety symptoms, and as we talked about, you know, these feel really, really uncomfortable, but they're not actually dangerous to us. And what can really sort of escalate a panic attack is when someone really kind of focuses on those symptoms of anxiety on their body. So they might start thinking, oh, you know, I'm having a heart attack, or, you know, something's happening to me that's, you know, really bad. And then that causes those physical symptoms of anxiety to kind of increase even more. And that can kind of, you know, appear to confirm this person's fears about what's happening. Oh, I am having a heart attack. This is really, really bad. This must be really, really bad. And before they know it, you know, they're having that kind of full-blown panic attack. And I think one of the best ways of kind of managing that is to do, again, coming back to that controlled breathing in and out, really, really gently, really, really calmly. And it will take probably a couple of minutes for the symptoms of anxiety to kind of subside. And just to say again, it's really important to remember that we don't need to get rid of those symptoms, because, you know, they're not harmful to us, and that controlled breathing really is about kind of just riding out those uncomfortable feelings. And you can, you know, even have like a phrase or something that you tell yourself. So for example, you might say, you know, this feels really unpleasant, but anxiety isn't harmful to me. It will stop if I just do nothing. And another tip, I think, is I think people who get panic attacks can, understandably, they can start avoiding things that might trigger them. So if somebody had a panic attack last time they were in the supermarket, they might never ever kind of go in that supermarket again. And my advice would be really just to try not to do that, to try not to kind of avoid things, because it can just, these things kind of just build up. It can make things worse, and it can make your life really, really, really small. And that's not how you want your life to be. You know, you want to kind of be able to go out and kind of do all the things that you want to do. There's some really great kind of self-help guides out there on the web. Just be really, really careful about where you're getting your information from. There's some great CBT stuff on panic and panic attacks. And again, if you're finding that it's, you know, having a really, really negative impact on your life, that you're not able to do the things that you want to do because of your panic attacks, then please kind of reach out and seek help. There's also, you know, a particular group of people that have panic attacks that are very much linked to something else. So, for example, somebody might have panic attacks as part of a phobia. So they might have panic attack every time they kind of get on the plane, or maybe go to the dentist, or as part of, you know, another kind of mental health problem. People who are depressed have panic attacks. People who have PTSD have panic attacks. So just kind of be aware of what's kind of going on for you. Be aware of your mental health. Be seeking help where you need it, and just, you know, prioritize your mental health and kind of seek to understand it and make sure that you're looking after yourself in the best way that you can.
Thanks, Kerry. And Adrian, do you have any other points to add?
I'm going to put my medical hat on, Joe, and encourage people to recognise that there are some things we do in our lives that can make panic attacks more likely to happen. So things like alcohol, smoking, using drugs, excess caffeine intake are all more likely to cause us to have a panic attack. So although the panic attack might be kind of situational, it's more likely to happen if we're sort of in the context of using those kinds of substances. So could that be something to direct attention to, maybe cutting down on?
That's really important to consider that as well when you are feeling that you're having a or you're progressing into a panic attack. Are there other things that you could do, maybe less of, to perhaps help and support yourself through that? So thank you for that as well. Thank you both so much for answering these questions that we've had today from our students. This is part of Mental Health Awareness Week and the theme of anxiety. We hope that listeners and viewers today have found what our panel have said helpful and supportive. I know personally I have. I want to thank you again both so much for contributing today. Until next time.